This talk today is going to be, well, it still is, but the title was The Life or Practice, Taking Evolution Personally. And this is going to get real personal. So a funny thing happened on the way to IEC. March 7th, 10 weeks ago today, I had a massive heart attack. My right ventricle artery closed down 100%. And when I say I'm glad to be here, I'm really glad to be here. So I was, I've been spending the winter down helping my wife with her aging mother. We've been doing a lot of that with my parents and then with hers. And I was driving back to Utah with my dog Lucy to finish this book, which is tentatively called The Life of Practice, Taking Evolution Personally. So I'm in Grand Junction, Colorado, about 220 miles from my home in southern Utah. And I go to the gym that I have gyms all over the country when I travel that I go to. So I have this great workout, and I'm walking out in the parking lot, and all of a sudden, everything starts tingling. And this pain right here just starts... It really hurts. And when you have a partial heart attack, I know a little more about heart attacks than I did before. You can think it's a strained muscle or indigestion or something. This was not subtle, okay? So I went, I'm having a heart attack. So the first thing that clicked into my mind, I got to get back to the hotel. Because if I die here, Lucy's going to be abandoned. And so I get in the 3.8 miles. I can barely breathe. I look in the rearview mirror. I'm white as virgin snow. I mean, it's like, I can't look at that anymore. So I finally, you know, and old people in front of you going slow, and you're just like, oh, dear. And so I get to the hotel. I stumble in the back part where my room was, and the key doesn't work. And finally, clack, thank you, God. I go and fall on the bed, and Lucy's there. You know, she comes and huddles up against me. And I called 911. I said, I'm in Ramada Inn, room 142, and I'm having a heart attack. And... then I call my wife and I said, honey, I'm having a heart attack. Ramada Inn, room 142. Lucy's here and I can't talk now. She goes, what? So they come and they get me and they haul me off to the, oh, and the miracle of miracles is, or dumb luck or grace, or however you want to say that, I was 1 mile from the regional cardiac center, St. Mary's Hospital. Thank you, Catholics. So... any place else on the trip, I would not be here, and there would be space for somebody else to do this thing. So I get into the emergency room, and they're like, and we have this app where I can tell where my wife is, 360, and, you know, so she knew I was at the hospital, and she called, and the doctor said, well, he's on the table now, he's having a heart attack, and we don't know if he's going to make it. So I'm sitting there, my pulse is down to 40, and they're going to do this angioplasty thing where they go through an artery here, and they put a balloon to open up the thing, and they make me sign this thing and go, this doesn't always work, so, you know, this may kill you. So, well, what do I got to lose, right? So, and I signed it, and I had this vision. I'd been teaching this class at Codrington College, which is the oldest seminary in the Western Hemisphere, and the class, the title of the class is Religion as Practice. I was going to the future of religion, but somebody already got that. Anyway, so it had been 13 weeks, toward the end of the class, and I had this vision of all their beautiful faces, my students, on Zoom, right? And it's like, we had an amazing class from a hotel room, the night before. And I said, well, if this is it, that's a good punctuation. I'm okay with it. And then they came up, and they opened the heart valve, and just... the pain went away, and I was just this flood of relief, and I was like, okay, I'm going to make it. And I went, thanks, God. And then I looked at the doctor and said, thank you, doc. You just saved my life. And he went, I guess he's not used to being, you know, gratitude on the emergency table. So they took me into ICU, and strangely enough, I had 5 hours of amazing mental and spiritual clarity. You know, just, wow, stuff I've been working through, resentments, this, that, the other, my, you know, what I'm doing with my life. By the way, vocationally, nothing's changed. I'm pretty much doing what I'm supposed to be doing. But it's really, and I'm calling people, and they say, I don't sound like you've had a massive heart attack. And I said, no, I feel really good. Well, the grace lasted for 5 hours. After 5 hours, I felt like I'd had a massive heart attack. And I was like, ah. And so my wife flew in, and her sister, and she got me alone and said, you better not die, you son of a bitch. Okay, I'm working on it. So, and I, Eric Wildbear, Lucy's, she's a lab rapid, half lab, half, so you don't get a little poodle idea, the visual, beautiful dog. He came up from Salt Lake and took care of Lucy, and so it was all getting squared away, and I went through two nights in ICU, and then one night, and then they let me go home, and, you know, I'm just, whoa, I'm so weak. I'm very controlling when I drive. I let my wife drive, no questions at that point. And I get home, and man, it's just like, it's everything's different. I feel really weak, and one of the things that happens is you have this great consciousness of your heart. It's a great mindfulness for, if not your spiritual heart, at least your physical pump. You know, you feel every little creak and bump. And three things. I had three spells while I was at home in this recovery process, and my hands would get really cold and sweaty, and my feet would get cold, and I'd start tingling like my whole body was falling asleep, and I'd get really dizzy, and I'm like, I'm having another heart attack. My blood pressure would go way up. So I'd go to the local clinic, and then it would come down. And went back a few weeks later, a couple of weeks later, back to the cardiologist in Colorado. He said, oh, she said that, well, that's just PTSD. And I went, oh, wow, that's cool. And, you know, because seriously, you know, I know all these brothers and sisters that are suffering from PTSD. And my response to tragedy and trauma in the past is be depressed. But this PTSD, let me tell you, beloved, it's physical. It wasn't my head. My body was freaking out. And once I knew that, it's like, you know, it almost went away. I had a little spell in Ireland recently, but it went away. And of course, you know, I awake. I'm like Willy Wonka in the chocolate factory. You know, I have all these great tools to use. And one thing was, well, he also said, one of the doctors said that because I was in really good shape, I survived. Otherwise, I just wouldn't have made it. It was really a miracle that I pulled through it all. And I began immediately to practice. One of the things that also happens with the post-massive heart attack is depression. You know, you feel, God, I don't even know if I'm going to be alive. Mortality's right in your face. And, you know, those who know me, they know I'm a fanatic about working out and integral practice, and I do it all the time. And the message, you know, in the morning I'd wake up, it's like, the world is so screwed up, and so are you, and you're completely unable to do anything about it. It's like, okay, thank you. So then I started meditating. So I would meditate, you know, for 2 hours or maybe more. And when I meditate using the technology, it intensifies the darkness before it lifts. So if you're looking for just a, you know, a happy quick fix or, you know, a bypass strategy, it's not that. So I would go in and it would just deepen. And I've been doing this for like 14, 15 years now on a daily basis. And so I knew it, still not pleasant, but at least you know that it's building up. And then it would lift like a fog. It would come out and like, whew, be left grateful, humbled, you know, feeling close to God. And then I started trying to work out again. So I'd go to the gym and, you know, just start to maybe 30, 40, 50% of what I'm normally doing. And you feel your heart, kung, 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 kung. It's kind of disconcerting. And then I started playing tennis again, which is another one of my practices. And I went out there with my wife, and we just, like, hit the ball back and forth a little bit. And no endurance. You know, just got really tired quick. And we kept it up. And our tennis court is, like, at over 7,000 feet. So this is, like, you know, high-tech. Very high-altitude tennis. So it works your heart good. If it didn't kill me, it was probably making me stronger, right? So before I left, we played tennis again. I played a full set, 5-6, and I lost, but I was alive at the end of it, you know, and my game's coming back and some brilliant things. Tennis is a really great spiritual practice for me. And it's just been such a, like I said, nothing has changed, but everything's changed. It's like the old Zen thing, you know, before enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. After, chop wood, carry water. So in this case, before heart attack, chop wood, carry water. After heart attack. And a friend of mine said that I'm playing in the bonus round, right, for you gamers. And it kind of feels like that, you know. It's like every day, wow, I'm back here. I'm alive. That's a, you know, that's amazing. Interesting thing going back to the parking lot and my dog. When I'm dying, the first thing that I think about is my dog, right? is like when it really came down to push came to shove, I put my dog first. So somebody told me that Abraham Lincoln once said, he said, "Don't tell me about your religion. Show me how you treat your dog." So Cynthia Wigglesworth, you know, if you're out there listening to this, you might put that in your spiritual test. So if the dog thing is really a test of our spiritual health, I'm doing good. I'm doing good. And I had a lot of emails like, "You're a complete idiot. You should have called in the parking lot." And that's true. But a noble idiot. Okay, so, but that made me feel good that when I'm faced with almost imminent demise, that I really was thinking about someone else, my beloved dog. So I think practice, integral practice, saved my life. It allowed me to be here. Oh, and then I go back 6 weeks later to the stress test. This is the big thing. If you've had a heart attack, so I go back to Colorado, St. Mary's, and I'm bummed out. I don't like hospitals. It saved my life and all that, but I just don't like being in hospitals. So I have my headphones on, and they're 7 in the morning, like sitting on the bench meditating, and they come and they bring me and they take me into this big x-ray where it's like a CAT scan, this huge thing, 20 minutes to take a picture of your heart. And they let me in train the whole time, so I'm, you know, just boom. And then I do the stress test, and they put you on a treadmill, and they hook all these things up to you and checking your blood pressure and your heart and this, all that. And they say, "Go for it," you know, because they wanted to get up to 135, but I get up there and I just keep going. And they say, "Well, go ahead, because, you know, the longer you go and the higher your heart rate gets, the better picture we have, the more data we have." So I'm having fun. And they go, "Okay, that's enough." Nobody's ever quite gone so crazy on the stress machine or on the treadmill. So they took me off. Then they put me in this big x-ray machine again. And by this time, I'm having like a class 5 mystical experience. I'm just like, you know, God, you know, and it's all love and it's okay, you know, just one of those experiences. And so they're, and I'm thinking, is this going to be like a false positive when they look at my heart? You know, it's going to be like glowing and then I'll die shortly thereafter. So anyway, I go back home, and a couple of days later, the nurse of the cardiologist calls me and says, "Well, everything looks really good." Oh, and there was another artery that was partially closed, and they thought they might have to do another procedure. No, it's fine. And I said, "Well, look, I'm planning this epic journey. I'm going to Barbados to teach at the seminary, and then I'm going to Ireland and teach in Belfast, and I'm going to IEC, you know, airplanes, multiple changes, getting up early in the morning." And say, "Yeah, go for it. You'll be fine." And I said, "And come and see us in 5 months." So, wow. All right. So it, yeah, it's a little bit scary, you know, getting on planes and stuff. And I'm not flying business class. So, you know, I'm a pretty big guy. And, it's really hard. But anyway, I maintain. And, of course, I meditate while I'm doing that. But it's really stressful. And, you know, it feels okay. It feels pretty good. And and I have nothing to base it on. People said, "Well, you don't look like you had a massive heart attack 10 weeks ago." I don't know what it looks like to have a massive heart attack 10 weeks ago. But the practice of the support and the kindness of people from the integral recovery community, from the spiritual technology community. We have a podcast. It's called The Journey of Integral Recovery. Those folks, the iAwake folks, are just really, it just makes you feel good, you know, and to be loved and to have people affirm that your life matters, you know. So, what else do I have to say? Okay, that's a lot of first person. So as we begin to wrap this up, let me get a little third person. My book is basically using the four pillars of this new integral edifice: the wake up, the grow up, the clean up, and the show up. And I was talking to some young people recently, and I said, "I'm going to tell you the meaning of life." Okay, boom, this is it. And see if you don't agree with me afterwards. Okay, you got to wake up. You got to remember who you are, what you are, always have been, are the present, always will be. Bam. Not just a head trip, but a completely realized gross body, subtle body, causal body, non-dual body, the whole thing. Okay? Boom. And you got to stay awake, too. I think people fall asleep, so you got to keep, you know. It's like I took a shower a month ago. You want me to take another one? No. Like, what? So And then we got to grow up. Like Ken is saying, we got to get to the highest level of our capacity. Because why? Because that's where all the answers are. And by the way, Europe, we found out today, it ain't going to happen in green. So we have to go there. And how do you do that? How do you wake up and how do you grow up? It takes practice. And Silas, wherever you are, I love the number your workshop. You know, he said, what is it? Integral practice is non-negotiable. You know, and as Ken says, that states are free, but stages take hard work. And we know what we have to do now, okay? And then we have to clean up. If you're an addict or an alcoholic or a food addict, you got to clean up your body and stop that crap because you can't do it. Some people can and you can't. And then you have to do the internal cleanup, the trauma, the PTSD, the negative stories about yourself, about reality, about others that are either conscious or unconscious that are affecting your mind and your body and your health. You got to come up with a story that approximates more positive than approximates reality. And the other thing that's super important, not only do we have the shadows, the dark shadows, the monster shadows that we saw in a workshop the other day, but we have the shadows of light, okay, the light dragons, those essential gifts that are ours and ours alone to give, that if we don't realize them and if we don't develop them and we don't give them back to the world, we get sad, we get cynical, we get depressed, we lose our purpose and we lose our path. And in the Gospel of Thomas, which is a gospel they found in the Egyptian desert in 1948 near a little village called Nag Hammadi in an earthen vessel. And it's a non-dual gospel. I mean, just when we need it the most, right? There it is. To me, it's like Jesus, the bootleg series, you know, the ones that didn't get released. And one of the verses that I really love, Jesus says, if you keep that which is inside of you, it will kill you. But if you bring it forth, it will give you life. And that's what happens when we give our gifts back to the world. When we get in those flow states and we're out of the way. And I'm not talking, I'm being talked. Or I'm not playing, I'm being played. Or I'm not writing, I'm being written through. And that is just, that's just the best. And it's not spiritual narcissism. It's where the rubber meets the road. And then, of course, the end part, you got to show up. You got to give it all back. You got to give it all back. You got to keep awake, stay awake, keep waking up. Get to the highest level of your potential. Work hard. Get support. Have community. Do all that. Get up there because that's where the answers and the creativity is going to be and the compassion we need to confront this mess. And you got to clean up, you know, constantly. And deal with your pain and your shadows and our collective shadows. Sometimes when I meditate, it's not just my stuff anymore. It's all of our stuff. Generations past, generations to come. And then we have to give it away. It's about service. You know, once we've done the work, and once we do that work, we do that essential work, then we, John Lennon said, you know, you can be the problem or you can be part of the solution. And it's just non-negotiable at this point. We got to practice, okay? And the early, you know, iterations of Integral, in most cases, it was a glorious head trip, you know? And Integral is a glorious head trip. It's the most glorious head trip I've ever been on. But the other lines have to catch up, and it has to be completely embodied. And now that we're moving in, and Ken's talking about third tier and all these different levels, there's this new territory that we're creating. And we don't have to worry about going too deep because, you can go through all these different layers, you know, the Hitler layer, this or that layer. But the deepest layer is the ground of being. It's God, it's goodness, it's spirit, a Buddha nature, however you want to define that. And it connects us to everything. And it's really, really good. And Maslow said that we have to touch into that at least once, but I think we have to touch into it regularly because that gives us the faith and the hope and the translucence to deal with the rest of the stuff. You know, without that, we're just dogs chasing our existential tails. Or if we try to do the other work, or just say the ego's not real and all this, it's all, well, any tradition that says the ego's not real, what happens is they get their butts kicked by the ego. So you have to do that side of the street too. So I think that's about all I have to say. And I love you guys so much. And I'm just grateful to be here. And you're so appreciated. So please come by, say hello. Let's reconnect or connect the first time. And anyway, I love you very much. Thank you. Thank you.